running the city, I guess, running Chinatown. Can you name someone that you remember?
Well, not too...
Somebody that people look up to. What are some of their...
Well, there were Y.C. Hong. He's a very noted lawyer that did all the immigration cases for the Chinatown.
Okay.
He was very well known.
Okay, he was active in the CACA.
Yes, he was, yes.
Okay. He just passed away a few years ago.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, there were others, but I can't recall any of them.
What kind of jobs were most of the Chinese in L.A. doing before the war, before World War II?
Well,
you have Chinatown. What were the Chinese on outside doing?
Well, the Chinese in Chinatown at that time, they were mostly having a produce wagon, horse wagon, and there were, I would say, there were numbered around 40 or 50 of them.
That was what, in the 1910s, somewhere in there?
Oh, no, that was 1920s.
20s? They still had that many?
Oh, yes. They had two big stables in Chinatown. And early in the morning, they would start and leave, go down the produce market, the wholesale produce market, and pick up their fruit and vegetable, and then they'd go to...
Where's the produce market?
9th Street and 7th Street.
That was run by Chinese too?
Well, a lot of them were run by Chinese and some Japanese and some Anglos. But that's how the Chinese wholesale produce gets started. See, there were so many of these peddlers that the Chinese started these little small wholesale produce houses. And their cousin or their relatives would come over and buy from them.
Oh.
And then these Chinese would go from all over, even to Pasadena, because at nighttime, then you can see them coming in with their horse, you know. And I remember on Alameda Street, that's when they start turning into Apple Plaza Street, where the two stables are. The horse was run. They know that they're going home to have something to eat. And they had a hard time holding them back.
So there was about, how many wagons you say?
I would say 70 of them.
70 of them?
Yeah, 70.
They would go down the 9th Street, load up, yeah, and then go all over the city.
Yeah, all over the city.
Horse and buggy.
Yes.
No car, no trucks or cars?
No. It's not buggy, but it's horse and wagon. You know, they're built up, so they display the boxes of fruit on the side on an angle, so that when they stop at a residence, and the lady of the house would come out, they could see these display of vegetable and fruit, and they'd hit them every day about the same time.
What about the Caucasians? Don't they do the same thing too?
No, that's, I guess the Caucasian had other ways of making money easier. This is a hard way to make money. You know, get them early in the morning. It's a long day, 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and then come back at 6 o'clock at night.
When did that start dying out?
Well,
did it go into the 30s at all?
Well, about the 30s, they start dying out, about the 30s, when the cars start coming in. See, some of the fellows change, a few of them change into Model T Ford at 1928 or something like that, and then from there on, it just kind of died down.
Okay. What about laundries now?
Laundries were coming up.
When? In the 20s?
A little bit in the 20s, but they reached its height around, I would say, in the 40s. In the 40s, I think they had about 360 Chinese hand laundry in Los Angeles.
Wow. Oh. So the Chinese were in produce, they were in the laundry, and I presume in the restaurants. Were there a lot of restaurants?
Yes, we're not as many as today, of course. Most of the restaurants were centralized in Chinatown, and the Caucasian would come down to Chinatown to eat. Then they started to go out of Chinatown, have a little restaurant here and a little restaurant there, and they were doing pretty good. So that's how the Chinese restaurant start to grow. because they found out that they can go to other than Chinatown and open a restaurant and make a success out of it.
Were there any jobs that were all Chinese, or I guess like the laundry, I guess it's all Chinese, right, more or less? And I guess there are other jobs that's all Caucasian where the Chinese could not even get in. Did the Chinese try to get into some of these industries, other industries, but could not get in the door at that time?
Oh yes, I think so, definitely so, because at that time they still had that law in the Constitution of State of California that none of the corporations can hire any Chinese. Now that law was rescinded only, I would say, maybe 10 years ago. That law has been on the books for all that time. And actually, when I worked for an American firm in 1934, a corporation, they were hiring me illegally, I would say, because the law was still in effect that no corporation could hire any Chinese. So there were so many laws against the Chinese that even those that would want to hire Chinese, they're kind of afraid to do it.
Oh, but you say in the 30s, you started to work for an American firm.
Yes.
Okay, you came out of that farm in Riverside, you went to school in L.A., and you got out of school. Now, what did you do after you got out of school?
I went to China for a short trip.
You went to China.
Then I went to San Francisco in the Depression. It was right at full force, which was 1930.
Yeah.
So I worked in San Francisco for a Chinese chain store.
What chain store was that?
A National Dollar Store. A
National Dollar Store.
I worked for them for until, now it's transferred down to here. When they opened up their new store in Broadway in 1934.
Broadway in what?
Broadway in 6 in Broadway.
Oh, is that still down there?
No, they closed that store up.
What was their pay, if I'm not being nosy? What is the typical hourly pay at that time?
I was started at $70 a month up in San Francisco, and the hours were 8 to 6, and then 3 nights a week we would work, the men folks would work from up to about 9:30 or 10 o'clock. And when we came down here, I got a raise, and I was making $85 a month, and we worked on the average of I would say a good 70 hours a week.
Wow.
So in 1934, I think I left them and worked for American Corporation, Zellerbach Paper Company.
Zellerbach?
Yeah, paper company, which is the California corporation. See, at that time, the law was still in effect that no corporation could hire any Chinese, but somehow or the other, I guess they weren't aware of it or something, and I got in.
You mean you just went to the door and applied for the job and you got in?
No, it wasn't that easy. Every job has its little connections.
Yeah.
I was doing a little buying of the paper bags and everything for the National Dollar Store, so I assistant sales manager was calling on us from a Zellerbach Paper Company, and I asked him if there was any chance of a Chinese going out and calling on the Chinese trade, which I don't think Zellerbach had. And I guess he was kind enough to introduce me to the sales manager, and through him I think I got a chance. He told me that we would give you a chance if you show that you can produce. We'll keep you on. If you can't, then we'll have to let you go. He said, is that fair enough? And I said, that's very fair. So they gave me a chance.
Oh, so you're one of the first Chinese to work, say, for Zellerbach at that time. Oh, say the average Chinese that were living in L.A., What was their income at that time? You have any rough idea?
Well, I would say...
Say the general worker, how does he compare with the average Caucasian?
Oh, way below, I think. I talked to some of the fellow working in our restaurant things, they were getting $60 a month, $50 a month, you know.
With room and board, Chinese.
Yeah.
When you work for National Dollar, it does not include room and board.
It included room, but that does not include...
No food.
No food at all.
Oh, that's typical Chinese, right? When you work with somebody, you either get a place to stay or...
That's right.
Or you... Did most of the Chinese here in the L.A. area live close to where other Chinese live?
Well, in the old days down Chinatown, there were a lot of Chinese that were grouped together. And there were a sprinkling of other Chinese outside. Then later on, after about the 30s or around there, they started to move out, all different parts of the city, mostly to around 21st Street, 22nd Street, Adams Street, around that way.
That was about what year?
About 1930s.
30. They start going down.
Yeah. And some even moved to, Lincoln Heights, near the high school, in around 25, and a lot of Chinese were moving even to the west side, which is considered, a real nice section of town.
Do the Chinese generally move if the neighborhood changes? I don't know if the neighborhood change here at the railroad station or anything. I mean, if a big group of people come in, do the Chinese get nervous and move out of that neighborhood? Do they ever do that?
No, not Chinatown. I wouldn't think that they would move because those people that used to live in Chinatown were mostly the older people, and I don't think they would move just on account of other groups are moving in or something. But I know for a fact that in the southwest side, say around 21st Street or thereabout Adams, they did move. They when other races moved in, they started to slowly move to westward, to maybe to around Crenshaw area.
Okay. The Chinese here in Los Angeles, what did they do with most of the money they said? They gambled, they sent it back to China, put it in banks, or just sock it away in a deposit box? What was their thinking in the 20s and the 30s? There was no Chinese bank at that time, right?
That's right, yeah.
So what did the Chinese do with the money?
Well, most of the Chinese at that time had a lot of cash on hand, I think. They didn't trust the banks because, they're afraid of the banks. They didn't know how to speak English until one of the banks in Main Street hired a Chinese man.
What bank was that,
I don't remember. I think it was Bank of America, but I'm not sure. I think this fellow is a Mr. Wu. He was one of the first Chinese employed by a bank. And as a result, most of the Chinese would go down over there and talk to him and the Chinese and ask a lot of questions. Because the Chinese didn't know how to speak English. They didn't know how they should deposit the money and what kind of protection they would get, and whether it's secured or not, and can they send money to their relatives back in China and all that. And I think from there on, the Chinese seemed to deposit their money in banks and trust the banks more than they did before.
Oh, I see. But they all participated in some gambling and...
There were gamblings wide open over there. They spent some of that money over there. A lot of them sent money back to China because they still had relatives back there.
Oh, I see. You ever hear of any... what about Chinese in politics in China? You always hear these stories of... Chinese supporting the revolution of 1911, Sun Yat-sen and so forth. Do you see any of that in your early years?
No, I was too young, I guess.
You ever hear of any?
Well, no, I didn't, but a Kuomintang party was pretty strong. They had a place down there on Apple Plaza Street, and they would have meetings, and we were just kids at that time, and when I noticed that they did have quite a few people there when they do have meetings.
Oh. Did many Chinese feel they had an obligation in China to have to send money to support a family? Is that it?
Oh, yes. I think most of them did. Those that did send money that I talked to, they felt as though that they had they made a little bit more money than the ones back there, and they needed the money, and they felt a sort of obligation that they sent them a little bit.
Now you talk about the 1930s and the Depression. How did the Depression affect the Chinese here now in L.A.? Do you remember that in the early 30s?
Yes, I think it affected them just as much as they affected the other races. Although I know that some of the Chinese that didn't trust the banks or anything,
yeah.
Kept the money at home and all that, they did pretty well. It seemed as though they took some of that money and they could buy things much cheaper, for instance, real estate or things like that. And they did real good. And a lot of those Chinese at that time that put the money away privately at home or in the store or something like that, I think were had looked caught in gambling, had interest in gambling or something
yeah.
like that, where they cannot really deposit their money in a bank as such without having maybe people questioning them, you know, where did they get that? So they were the one that, after the Depression, were buying stores, property, and other things.
So when the banks closed in the Depression, they weren't hurt
at all? They weren't hurt at all.
Oh, and the farmers were still farming during the Depression.
Yes, the farmers were farming. They didn't do very good, but they got by, you know. But it's after the Depression that the farmers did real good. They started to, farmland started the high, and they were starting to build tracks home, you know, and a lot of the Chinese owned those farms that they built tracks of track homes in. And they did very well by selling them.
Oh, that was in the 30s.
Yeah.
You're talking
about the
40s,
you know.
Oh, in the 40s. I thought the Chinese could not own land here. What did they do? Make their kids buy the land for them? Is that the way they run it?
Chinese could not own land, but a Chinese citizen could. I mean, American citizen could own land. That means that if the Chinese had the son that was born here, they can buy land.
Oh. Okay, so that's how they went to the Depression. Did you ever feel there was hostility toward the Chinese in Los Angeles? I guess I'm trying to get a feel of what did Americans think of the Chinese in the 20s and 30s, I guess.
Well, I guess there was some hostility. There was, it's always been present. When I was even when I was
This is the end of tape one, side A. Walter Chung, 90 minute to 60 minute duplication.